Episode 14.
The whole situation, it was hard and missing home and all this stuff. And it just means that even in the tough times, there's still big good things happening to you. You just got to keep going. I am Mari Åsuhole and I am Beyond Athletic.
You might be smarter, your daddy might own a company, but you will not outwork me.
This one right here is for the people.
I'm your host, Ryan J. Owens, current pro athlete, entrepreneur, and former USA national team volleyball player. I will not be defined by my athleticism alone, but I've learned how to leverage it to stay passionate about it and prepare for life. That's why the Beyond Athletic podcast was born. I'll bring you case studies of current and former elite athletes making it happen in life, as well as tips and lessons from top sources in sports, nutrition, fitness, entrepreneurship, and more. I'm here to tell you that you are Beyond Athletic.
Hey there, guys. So today we got on Mari Åsuhole. She is from Norway. I'm very proud, actually, to have a Norwegian on the show because my grandfather is Norwegian. And I'm looking forward to going to Norway this next summer, hopefully, to meet some of my family, my great-grandparents and cousins, etc., etc. So it was finally a joy to speak to somebody from Norway that's younger than my grandpa, who's awesome, by the way. And right now, playing in France, she was an All-American in American college volleyball, and she was the best scorer of the French league last year. She talks a bit about how she struggled when she was overseas in America with homesickness and how she got over that. She talks about how her family has some high goals, or at least they're goal-oriented, and they love to do things outdoors like hike, and this is why she got into sports. Everybody's pretty much a sportsman in her family. We talk about her obstacles where she got injured and missed a ton of junior national team competitions, things that she'd worked so hard from. And then how she learned that through patience, hard work, and preparation, that she can reposition herself and get back in the game and attain high levels of success, which she went on to do, becoming that All-American and last year best scorer in France. So you're not going to be disappointed by today's show. She is a very hard worker. I know for a fact that not only is she working her butt off in the French league right now, but she's also trying to help her younger brother, Hendrik, get to university in America or Canada, because it's a top goal of his now too. And I gotta say, I'm helping out, but she's doing so much. It's incredible how she balances everything. So very inspirational, very hard worker. And I think that you're gonna learn a lot from her today. So enjoy the show. If you do, leave a review on iTunes, go to beyondathletic.com/iTunes or beyondathletic.com/review. If you don't have iTunes, please share this with a friend. Think of one person, post it on your social media, on your Twitter. Anybody that leaves reviews, I'm definitely going to mention them on the show. Today, I'd just like to mention a couple people. First off is Maja Burazer from Croatia, who left a 5-star rating and pretty much said that Mia Jerkov was a very big inspiration to her and very much enjoyed that last show. So if you didn't hear that show, check it out. And another shout out goes to a coach right now at South Carolina. He was a former coach at Wichita State, which I know because one of my former players for Elite Volley Agency, Emily Stockman, played with him. And it came out of the blue. I was not expecting it, but he donated to the podcast. And I just want to say a very special thank you to RJ Abella with the South Carolina Gamecocks volleyball team, because he's done so much to support in terms of, as soon as Beyond Athletic launched, he let me know, hey, I posted this for all the girls to improve from and learn from. And really, that's inspiring to see coaches that are so invested in their player success. So go check him out. I think he's at Coach Ridge. That's Coach RIDGE on Twitter. And big thank you, RJ. By the way, we kind of got the same initials. And also, this show is for you guys. So if you think of somebody who's the top of their sport or at the top of helping people in life in any way, business, fitness, health, etc., etc., that might be a guest on the show, let me know. Email me, ryan@beyondathletic.com or beyondathletic.com/invite, I-N-V-I-T-E. And you can sign up there. And now get ready for the show. This is somebody who desires something new, a new challenge all the time. So without any further ado, I give you Mare Acejole. Welcome on the Beyond Athletic Podcast, Mari.
Thank you.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, actually. I'm a little disappointed in my puppy because he peed in the house. But other than that, I'm really happy I got you on.
Oh, that's good.
You're like, I'm glad you're happy about something. Huh? So, listen, before we get into the interview, I like to give people a little bit about our guests. And this podcast is a place where athletes and coaches of any sort can learn from guests' failures, their successes, like your personal habits and tools to excel, not only in sport, but in the game of life, right? So The reason why I had Mari on is because Mari is from Norway and she played volleyball in America and she did really well. She's an All-American. We can go through her bio, but that's really important that people understand that you don't always have to stay where you are to do what you love, or to, if you have some goals, sometimes you've got to change places to get those done. So Mari was born in Müritz, Switzerland. She lives in Oslo, Norway. She went to school at Ohio State. And she comes from a skiing and volleyball family. I think your mother also played in America a little bit, right? For college?
Yeah. You're in Hawaii.
You're the oldest of three siblings. You all ended up playing volleyball, even though none of you started with it, you said.
Yes.
You're a Norwegian national team player. You play mostly indoor, but you play some beach during the summer, which is actually great to improve at any sport, but especially indoor volleyball. You are first team Big Ten and an All-American. It's your second year in France, the first year you spent in Istres. I think that's near Paris, correct?
No, it's close to Marseille.
Way off. Béziers is your second team, and where is that exactly?
That is close to Montpellier.
Montpellier is such a beautiful city.
That is true.
Yeah. Anyways, the first year you were in France, you were the best point scorer and attacker. And That's a little bit about you and your history. A little bit of other things outside of that I know is that you're being a great big sister and you're trying to help your brother right now, Hendrik, go to school either in Canada or the States, hopefully the States. So I hope that we can help. I hope that I can help. But good luck with that.
Thank you.
What I want to do now is I want you to tell us, Mari, I want you to tell us so we know a little bit more about who you are. Tell us your personal story from where you were born up until the moment you decided to play volleyball as your serious option and why. You ready?
Yes.
Awesome.
Well, so I'm the oldest of three. We are all born in Switzerland, and then we moved to Norway when I was ready to start school. At school, I started soccer, and soccer was the big sport up until right before I started high school. As you mentioned, my family are very sports interested. We grew up not far from the forest, so in all the weekends we tended to go hiking and biking in the woods, and in winters we went skiing. It's a very clear split in our family that everyone on my dad's side are skiers and have been on national teams, and then everyone on my mom's side are volleyball players and have also been on different national teams. So
Wow. There's
always, sports has always been a big thing in our family. Neither one of us kids started off with volleyball, so volleyball kind of came in later. My parents were very big on the fact that we should do different sports, so none of us were really allowed to just do one sport until high school, because they wanted to keep us like interested in the sports and not get sick of it, as they, when they were young, kind of got too one-tracked at too early stage.
Mm-hmm.
So I did soccer and volleyball, and then I ended up getting an injury I got jumper's knee, so I weren't allowed to do either one for a few months. So then I just found out at that point that I missed volleyball the most, and at the same time I got picked up by the senior team in my club and then national team, so kind of just tracked off to volleyball from there. And then from that on I played soccer just for fun. Mm-hmm. As long as the team still wanted me. So that's kind of it, my general story up and through high school, and then I went off to the States.
Yeah. And one quick question, what was the time range when you were kind of, I don't know if I'm going to play volleyball, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do really 100%, and then you got picked up by the national, or your first team with your club?
Yeah, well, I got jumper's knee in the, I think I was in my freshman year of high school, which in the American sense would be sophomore year. Mm-hmm. So then I couldn't do anything for about 4 months. In that time, I lost like the Norwegian championship. I lost some junior national team activity. Mm-hmm. And I just, up to that point, I played a lot of soccer. I was on different regional or the regional team. And we were a really good local soccer team that had stuck together, a group of friends that had stuck together since we were fourth grade. And at that point, I just missed volleyball more and more. I still missed soccer, but not in the same way. Yeah. So then when I could start coming back, I still wasn't allowed to jump for the next 8 months or so, but I could still start playing volleyball. So that was kind of just the thing that turned to which sport I wanted to stick with. Because up until that point, I did a pretty 50-50 and tried to participate in everything I could. Mm-hmm. But after that, I kind of got more and more tracked in volleyball.
Yeah. So, Mari, listeners now, they have like a great idea of your past. But before we get into your journey after picking up volleyball, I'd like to find out what drives athletes, you know? We all have those things that just like really push us. And in hard times, or even in when times are going really, really well, we need something to keep us focused or keep us, you know, like powered up. So do you have an inspirational quote or motto that you believe in? And what does it mean to you?
I have a Norwegian one. I don't know who the author is, but I got it from my mom a few years ago. I think I actually heard it for the first time I was in the States. And it is, in Norwegian, it is Stell I bakkene vokser blomster, which in directly translated means that even in the hills, the flowers are growing. Which that one was kind of stuck with me because I got it during a time in the States where I was just struggling with the whole situation. It was hard and missing home and all this stuff. And it just means that even in the tough times, there'll still be good things happening to you. You just got to keep going.
I honestly, I love this quote, and I think you know I like it because when you told me about it in the pre-interview, I really wanted to know what it sounded like in Norwegian. And you know I have like this interest in Norwegian because I have Norwegian blood running through me now. Maybe you thought I was like, why is he asking? But that sounded awesome, and I love that because yeah, when times are hard, you know, it's gonna get easier, you know, if you just keep pushing forward. So that's a fantastic quote. So listen, now there are many things that prove goodness in the world, and there's many that are big, they're small, you know, these good things like emotions, physical things, psychological things, whatever, that we're all given to us by other people. Like they gave them to us daily or once in a while with things they did or said or situations, you know, that provided us something. It's important to remember to give credit where it's due, right? Because these good things got us to where we are in life at this moment. So with that in mind, what are you most grateful for in life?
I think that would have to be my family. I know it's pretty cliche, but without them, I would never have gotten to where I am. And my parents, they taught us three kids a lot of things already from a young age. They were always taking us to different sports activities and Like, we never had, like, weekends where we just sat at home. We always did something, and they always taught us to work hard. And, like, we got tired at times from, like, long hikes, but we always had a reward at the end. And I think that really taught us a lot that has helped all of us now succeed in what we have decided to do. So they would definitely have to be the most important people in my life. And then now that I've gotten older, my siblings have gotten more and more important as well. And so now the three of us are sharing some of the same experiences, and then we are going through a lot of the same things. So we have also gotten more important for each other, for support and advice.
Yeah. Now, in order to achieve any level of success on the path to excellence, let's say, there's always going to be speed bumps, right? I mean, we've gone through this a little bit where you said you went to the States and it was a little rough there because you were homesick, meaning you missed home. And there were times like on your hikes, you know, with your family. I actually love that you did that because, first of all, hiking is awesome. Being in the outdoors is really a great thing. It does teach you a lot, you know. Sometimes you're super tired and you've got like this rough terrain and rocks are falling and you're slipping and it's cold or it's whatever. Maybe it's just boring the crap out of you. But like then you get to wherever you're going, like the summit, let's say, and you just go, oh my God, that was totally worth it. Whether because it's beautiful or just the feeling of achieving that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's always these speed bumps, these dead ends, these like delete memory card moments, let's say, in our lives. So what I want to do, I want to start off by not going first to your successes, because we know you've had many so far, but tell us a time that you made a bad choice or when there was an obstacle that stopped you from growing as a person or competing at your highest level. I want you to take us back to that moment, that place and time. Tell us what happened and what you learned from it.
I think that would be more injury related. I remember when I got my jumper's knee, I was at the Olympic Training Center of Norway with the junior national team in beach volleyball. We were doing testing. We were testing our jump reach. And I made a jump and something just did not feel right. I got an extreme pain in the knee. So they kind of stopped me there. I did a few more jumps and then I told them and then we stopped. Luckily, I have an uncle that's lived right next to it and is a sports doctor at the facility. So I got stopped at him on the way home and he checked it out and it got confirmed. It was jumper's knee. And then in 3 weeks time, I had my second Norwegian championship. And like this year, we were the oldest in our group. My team, we were also just a group of friends that my mom coached. So we were like having big hopes. I did 3 weeks where I barely did anything. I biked for hours a day because that was all I was allowed to do. So then we went to the national or the championship and I didn't play the first game. I tried the second game. I was able to play through half of the match or half of the set and I blew the other knee as well. But I didn't want to tell my mom because I looked so much forward to this tournament. So I had to have the girls on the team bounce the ball to me for serving because I couldn't bend down to pick it up.
Wow.
So then my mom picked it up pretty fast. Like, mom, see everything. So then I was taken straight out and put on the bench and I was told not to do anything else. She was not too pleased with the situation just because she knew that now it's going to be a tough road ahead. So then I was out for the next 4 or 5 months, I think, completely out of anything. So I did a lot of rehab over the summer. And then fall came around, I was allowed to start playing volleyball, but no jumping. So I played literally just a libero at every practice for 6 months. So then after that, it kind of, the surgery was an option, but then eventually found out that it was not worth the risk. So then I just kind of worked it out after that. And then, but through that year, I lost a lot of other big competitions I'd work hard for. So then just as I got back, we played, the national team came up again. And then during the first game, I pulled a muscle. So that was kind of like a big blow in the face, you can say, because then I'd worked so hard up to that point for 2 years, a year and a half time period where I couldn't compete in anything. And that as a junior, that was like finally now was going to be my time because I lost all the junior year, basically. So I really looked forward to this because that was my last year as well. So that couldn't do that one. So I remember that was probably one of the hardest hits in my face when they told me after that game. Because they played the whole game and it was okay. But after that game, they told me that you were done. And then when they told me that it was pretty severe pulled muscle too, I was out for another 2 months. And in that time, I was supposed to go to Japan with one of the teams in Norway and train with them. Stanford was going to come over and watch me play, and UCLA came after. But by that time, I was good to go again. So I just remember that time just being, it was just like one hit after the other. And I've never had a lot of injuries, but when I first get one, they tend to be pretty bad. Or not bad, but take me out for a while, and they were just back to back, and I lost like a lot of big tournaments that you look forward as a junior, and you work hard to get to that point, and finally you are in the environment, and then it's just all crash all over again.
Yeah.
I guess that was just 2 years of hard work on and off, and really building up expectations to new tournaments, and then just find out that you're right back to start again.
And all because of one pretty bad decision to keep playing, which is not something that's uncommon, you know? A lot of athletes have done that. I know I've done that. I remember when my shoulder hurt and I felt that little twinge, you know? And you go, yeah. Ooh, what's that? That does not feel good, but okay, maybe I'll play some more. And you're super in the moment, let's say, and you just keep going. And you end up making choices that really, we call it the snowball effect. I'm sure you're familiar with it. But for other people, think of when it snows. Hopefully you've been somewhere where it snows if you're listening. But you have a snowball that you make this little snowball. And then let's say a friend is standing away from you a few meters and you just roll it to them. That snowball is going to get bigger. And they roll it back to you and it gets bigger and bigger until let's say you can make a snowman. We call that snowball effect, and in this case, it's really bad because something just keeps compounding and compounding. And so where Mari should have said, wait a minute, this hurts when I'm doing this jump test, and they said 3 weeks, so I should do nothing but bike, and then I should take it slow. She went fast, the other knee ended up getting hurt. I did this something similar in Belgium, by the way, my first year pro. And then you're out for so long, and you missed so many things that you worked your butt off for, and now you look back, what's your main takeaway from that lesson?
Well, we decided with the doctors and coaches that all people that were involved that we were going to give the championship a try, because by that point, like, the injury wasn't very bad, and they all, like, we would give it a try and see how it goes, and then I guess I was just really unlucky that I got jumper's knee in both knees. But I look back at it now, and I learned so much in that time period that I would never have gotten to where I am today without that obstacle. Because it just taught me a lot about patience, a lot about hard work, and it's just being more taking care of my body. And I've talked to other people too that was with me in that time period, because that was when I first started training with the senior team of my club. And they saw a big improvement of my volleyball skills in the time coming after that, because when I couldn't jump, I had to focus. I still came to every practice every day. I did serving, I did passing and defense and everything that didn't require me to jump. And they have said that the improvement that I made, like the personal improvement, both volleyball-wise and just mental, was, I made big strides in that two-year period, just because I had to work from a different angle that I hadn't had to work with before. I had to change my focus. I had to, like, just basically just work on everything from a different angle, and that helped me grow as a person and as a volleyball player. So looking back in it now, yeah, it sucked, but it did teach me a lot, and it has been a part of my story that brought me to where I am today.
Now, Mari, I'd love to just go through something here because you said a couple things that I want to pull out for people listening really, really to key in on. You know, the lessons that you learned from this were patience, hard work, preparation. So yeah, maybe you made a couple of bad choices and maybe you had some unlucky moments, but that does not mean in the future you can't minimize those effects of those types of things, right? So what did you do in order to stay on top of your game instead of saying, crap, I can't play, I'm just going to like go have a nice vacation and chill, and even if I show up to practice, let's say my coach makes me, I'm not going to pay attention. No, you tried to serve, you watched, you stayed super focused. And now what I want people to think about here is what Mari did was she repositioned herself. She repositioned her thinking and said, listen, I'm out of training, but you weren't mentally out of training. And this mental training that you are doing is actually very, very beneficial. And a ton of elite athletes use this. And this is why they show up to trainings. And this is even at home things that they'll do. Or in a bus, they'll rehearse what they want to do. They'll think about new ways to improve. So those were my takeaways from that also. Now, what I like to know now is, what is or was your biggest fear in life?
Oh, I guess my biggest fear has just been to like not be successful. Because like, growing up in such an athletic family and everyone is doing so well in all the different areas, and being a big sister and all of that, you just want to be successful for your family and like for yourself. And I guess that's just been the big thing. Like, I don't want to disappoint people. That probably comes a lot from being the oldest, and you're supposed to like show the way and try to help out at home as much as you can.
Yeah.
So that, like, that whole thing about being not successful or like wanting to be successful, not fail, can be angled in many ways, and probably related a lot to sport too, that you're putting so many hours into it and making so many sacrifices that not necessarily everyone can see that you're doing.
Yeah.
That you just put so much into it that you really, really want to succeed. And at one point, the fear of failure will also start getting to you.
The fear of failure is one of the biggest fears out there for many people across all things. I mean, I know starting my business in the beginning, I started Elite Volley Agency back in 2006. I was afraid actually on the other side. I wasn't afraid of failing because I knew too many people in volleyball and I knew exactly what I needed as a player and I was using myself as a guinea pig. So I knew that it worked, right? But what I was afraid of is I was actually afraid of success. I was like, what happens if this works with other people and then I've got to do this day in and day out? Like now all of a sudden there's these expectations, right? That's what I was afraid of. So it goes both ways. So thanks so much for pointing that out. Listen, a lot of what you've gone through and a lot of what we've already gone over has made you the athlete whom you are today, Mari, the adult, right? What did you learn from your experiences until now, if you were to sum it up in one or two sentences?
I've learned that hard work does pay off. I've also learned that if you want to get somewhere, you have to put in a lot of the hours yourself. Don't expect anyone else to do it for you or like cheer you along constantly. It has to come from you. So that's probably the two main things I've learned, that hard work pays off and you have to be the trigger point behind it.
I like that. You have to be the trigger point behind it. Yeah, you have to have that intrinsic, that internal motivation, where you find your reason for doing whatever you're doing and you push super hard for it. And you gotta stay patient, like Mari was saying she was during this obstacle time in her life, because it's gonna pay off, you know? It goes back to your quote, you know? I love that quote. So can you say it one more time in Norwegian? I just love it.
Selv i motbakker vokser det blomster.
I love it. So I'm going to put that in the show notes for everyone, because that is something great to remind you that when you are working your butt off, when you're training, when you feel like, you know, you're sore and you wake up, I mean, it's something you could have on the mirror in your bathroom so that you don't just stare at yourself all the time, but you stare at what you want to be, you know? So listen, I would like, before we go into get to this point, to, I said, you know, we're going to go through some fears, some failures, some obstacles, and we're getting to your success point. But before we do, you have such an interesting story, because as a young girl, you left Norway to go to America. And I'd like to just hear a little bit more about that. Why did you choose to leave Norway? And what were the main differences between Norway and America, both educationally and in volleyball?
Okay. Well, first of all, in Norway, every sport is driven from a club basis, so nothing is associated with school. Mm-hmm. So there was no, like, option to really do school and education at both equally high levels. And at the same time, by the time I finished high school, I'd already won everything that, or, like, achieved or won everything that I could in the Norwegian league. Because I was lucky that I grew up in the club that had the best senior team at the time. So I was just looking for a new challenge. I wanted to see how much further I could get. And my mom, as previously said, like, played in Hawaii, so I always knew about that option. So together we decided to give it a try and see if someone wanted me. And I got lucky. The UCLA came over. I visited them, and then I went there for 2 years. Then later on, I transferred to Ohio State. So I guess it was just the desire to try something new and see what I could achieve that kind of pulled me in that way, but it was not any easy road. Mm-hmm. But it was basically like the volleyball is so different. Like I said, the level at the time, like, there I couldn't get any higher in Norway than I already was, and I really wanted to combine it with school, and that is not an option in Norway because everything is club based. Mm-hmm. So that's why I made the move. So a lot of the differences in the volleyball lay in the organization of it, but also volleyball is so much bigger in the States. There's a huge economic aspect behind it that makes it so big. So there are just the expectations in volleyball are different. The coaches, like, I've never had that big of a staff around me before. I'm used to having one coach at practice at the time.
And you had practice. How many in America?
Well, everything from 4, I think, was the normal, and sometimes it could be 5 and... yeah, 3, just depending on the day.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit about, let's say, the differences just in life. Like, I mean, did you feel safe? How was food? How was all of that general things outside of volleyball?
No, I felt safe. I've been really lucky. I have had great teammates. Like, the coaching staffs at where I've gone have helped me through the worst parts, because it's been a big transition. Mm-hmm. And the schools I've gone to have been great as well, but... it was really tough. Like, it is a cultural transition, like, just, like, in practice and out of practice, and, but I had a good time. I had a lot of good people around me that helped me through it.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to highlight a few of those things for people, because now that you've gone through it, it's really interesting to hear why you wanted to go abroad, and then the differences were once you were there. And so a couple key points for people to realize is that in most places around the world, outside of just a few places, you cannot do both volleyball and school at a high level. It does not mean that, you know, you don't have one or both in your country. It's just that you can't do them both at the same time, at the same level. That was one huge driving factor for you. And another is that you wanted something new. You wanted a new challenge, that desire to be, you know, pushed. And this is something that I see so often in the people that I have on the show, is that they just have this hunger for, once they achieve something, they want to achieve something more, right? You have these goals that take you very far. So thanks for sharing all that. And I do want to know just one quick little thing, because sometimes you make a choice and it's not the best choice, or you have to make a U-turn. Like we were saying before, you have to reposition yourself if some obstacle comes in your life, like you did during your injury. What made you change from UCLA to Ohio State?
There's a few factors in there, but we changed. One thing was we changed the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. And the new coaching staff was great as well. It just wasn't a fit with me. And I had the coach and I, we had an open conversation about it, and he expressed his thoughts, and I was able to express mine, and together we came with the option that they were going to release me, and if I wanted to, I could see what other options I had. Mm-hmm. But he was also clear on the fact that if I wanted to stay, you're more than likely to stay, like, you still will have your scholarship and everything else, but... So that's what I did. Like, I was nice that this school still kept my option to stay, but I was also at the same time allowed to look around and see if there were any other fits that would work better for me and what I was interested in getting out of my stay in the States. And I was able to go visit Ohio State, and it turned out to be a great decision.
Fantastic. You know, I want people really to understand that, you know, let's say you decide to go somewhere, especially in the States. There's one key thing, the communication. That's what I got out of this from you, is that you communicated with the coaching staff. And because of this open communication, then you were able to approach the process of looking for alternatives in, let's say, not only just a normally, like, a get with the rules way, but without any animosity, without creating enemies. And so it is possible to, you know, that sometimes things won't be a good fit and a school in America might not be the best. And if you just communicate that with your team and with your school, there's other options possibly for you. So listen, I know we've gone through a lot. I'd like to, right before we get into this little fun, fast section that I've got planned for you, I'd like to know, what's coming up next for you? What's got you most excited these days?
Well, obviously Christmas. I'm really excited to go home in about 19 days. But other than that, volleyball-wise, we're going to head into second round of the CV Cup next week. So that's like the first big thing coming up. So that's kind of where the mind is right now. And then naturally I'm excited for the summer to go home again and play with the national team and my group of girls, if one can say so, just being home again and playing with my sister and being around the Norwegian whole aspect of that is just something I look forward to every year. Just because I'm away so many months of the year.
Yeah. So Mari, now we're gonna be in what I'm gonna deem it today, the tip jar. Okay, this could be your tip jar. What was holding you back from becoming a great athlete?
One thing is the fear of doing, like, the fear of failure. But at the same time, as you said, you can one sometimes almost be afraid of the success as well. But for me, I think one of the things I was scared of, sticking out too much. I didn't want to take too much space. And if you want to succeed, you have to stick out a little bit. Like, you have to make yourself seen. Mm-hmm. So that was probably one of the things that at times have held me back, that I'm not necessarily one of those that walk into a room and just grab all the attention that is there.
Yeah.
And but so, you still have to be confident in order to succeed. So the confident aspect has definitely been a point that has kept me from doing stuff.
And what's the best way that you've found to get rid of negative thoughts while you're competing or training?
You kind of just got to forget about it and just get the next ball. It's really hard. Like, everyone says, so you got to forget about it. But as an athlete, you always want to do the best you can, and you kind of at times get stuck with your mistakes, but just got to really try to let it go and get the next ball and kind of just block it out and zone in on the next action you have ahead of you.
Yeah. Now,
easier said than
done. Yeah, for sure, easier said than done. Listen, I'd like, if possible, for you to share something, let's say it could be tiny, that you do, some trigger that you have to help you with that. Like, for instance, this goes back to Finland when I actually, just coming from the national team, I transitioned from a very mental player with going to Team USA and working with a sports therapist and then having a coach who was just an amazing leader. And then having teammates that held me so accountable. I had taken a year off, but then I ended up in Finland. And I was worried, you know, a year off, oh my God, are things going to go well? And I remember, instead of going back to that old me, I just said, listen, after every point, I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to shake it off. And so I didn't know any other better way. But if you watch my videos, if I made a mistake or if there was some just like really bad point, you'll see right before, like when the whistle blows, I always just kind of like shook my hands off. And at the same time, you can't see it, but I was just taking a very deep breath in and out. And that was my trigger in order to let go. Did you have anything like that?
Not necessarily.
No.
Not one special thing, kind of just depends a little bit on the day and how high the frustration level gets, because that at times can get really high.
Yeah.
So then when the really high ones, I just have to like lock it down and just sometimes I take a deep breath and just kind of calm myself down, because when I tend to then get very tense, so then I do a lot of unnecessary movements and that doesn't really help the outcome. And then but just on general days, like I felt that it helps a lot to like smile and kind of be more like going, because I feel like the more and more you shut down and kind of lock everyone out, the harder it will get for you to get out of it. So okay. Kind of, I've learned that at times it also helps to engage yourself with the team. Don't shut yourself down. That is probably an experience from the States too, because we were not allowed to shut down, ever.
Yeah.
So that was something I had to learn when I got to, primarily to Ohio State, that you do not get to go inwards, which I had done a lot before. They had to go out to the team. So that's an experience from the States for sure.
Yeah. Fantastic. Listen, the takeaways I got from that, just to keep it really, really simple, breathe. These centering breaths are really big. These, like, the ones that are nice and slow, they could even be fast. It doesn't matter. Just to allow you to release that pressure and smile. This is so good. I have to remind myself of this. Even in daily life, sometimes I get so focused and I start getting so tensed up and I'm like, ah, and I just have to smile and it just all melts away. Because when you smile, other people, they give you back that energy and you just kind of relax into your own self. And then that last thing, you weren't allowed to go into yourself, because this is a really defeating trait, let's say, of ourselves sometimes, is that sometimes we like to go like a turtle into our shell, but no, you were taught to engage. And now instead of in hard times kind of going in your shell, you engage with your teammates. And this is really the sign of true leaders and true teammate spirit. So thanks for sharing. Now, besides being an athlete, what tool or practice do you use to improve yourself as a human being?
Ooh. Well, that's a good question. I kind of just try to be appreciative of what I have and try to do things that, because when you live abroad, like I do, like the days get kind of very similar every day, so you got to kind of do things to make them different. Well, you try to like involve yourself with the people around you. They all have their own story, so it's interesting to learn from them, then, because you all have different cultural backgrounds.
Yeah.
Learn a lot about how different people act in different situations.
Mm-hmm.
So But because I've been living so many years in different places, I've been lucky to engage with a lot of different people, and I'm sure that has given me experiences and different thoughts process that I don't necessarily think of, but I'm sure that other people that have known me from a young age can see areas that I have naturally improved on just by being around all these different people and how they view life in general.
Yeah. So taking things from other people, it's really important. Listen, I want you to act like we're pushing fast forward button, like that 10X or that 20X button, right, on the remote. And how long do you sleep? And take us through your morning up until the time before you arrive to training.
I probably sleep around 8 hours a night. Kind of depends a little, some 7 to 9, just depending. I wake up to an hour before practice. I get dressed right away, and then I walk down and make myself a breakfast, and I take my time eating it. I go online, look at Norwegian newspapers, and just kind of catch up on different things. And then we meet up outside about half an hour before practice to drive into practice, and then that's it.
Got it. And what's one thing you like to do to adjust to a new team or a new, like, city?
Well, to adjust to a new city, I like to explore. So we, the foreigners of us that are here in Béziers, we've done some exploring and been some miss and hits, but that definitely has helped us get to know the city, which has been very helpful, and it's nice to know the area.
Yeah.
And then you get to know your new teammates. So, well, when you go exploring with new teammates, we're all like four tall girls walking around in a city, all speaking English, so everyone obviously knows that we're not from here.
Yeah. No.
But that's how we get a lot of good stories out of it, and we laugh and engage yourself in your surroundings.
Yeah, engage yourself in your surroundings. I love that. Now let's take a moment to talk about exactly that, other people, because they're so vital to our happiness and our success, right? So what book would you give away to an athlete as a gift? And just really quick, one reason why.
Well, I read a lot of books, but they don't, not all of them have like a super sporty relation. But over this past summer, I read a book that's called A Half a Year, I think, in English. I read it in Norwegian, but it's written by Yo-Yo Moise. And it's basically just about two people. They're getting together, where one guy's been in a major accident, so he's kind of lost his willing to live life. So you kind of just follow their story for the next 6 months, and just teaches you a lot about life and to kind of grab the chances you get and don't waste opportunities.
Yeah, I'm going to look that up. I love that, because you know what, Mari, the books don't have to be, you know, something that's about sport to be for an athlete, because the whole purpose of Beyond Athletic is to talk about how we are three-dimensional people. And I don't want to see athletes get stuck in that one-dimensional mode, you know, like, I've only got sport, and sport's all that matters to me, and it's my only option, it's my only way to be happy or succeed. So that's a fantastic recommendation. It'll be in the show notes. Now, who was one key mentor in your life and sport? And just really quick, why?
That would be my mom. She was my first coach, so she's been a mentor all the way, because she has the experience from the States as well. So going through all the emotions and challenges from the States, it was a great thing to be able to call home and like actually have someone from home understanding what you're going through.
Yeah.
So she has definitely been a big, big major factor in my life so far.
Okay.
With, of course, the rest of my family too, but in that aspect she has stood out.
I can understand that. Yeah, not only was she your mom, but she coached you and really just helped you come out of your shell, because sometimes what you need in a mentor, actually all the time what you need in a mentor, is someone who can guide you, like let you find the answers to questions and the solutions to problems, but really just help you along that path and be there for you if you need them. So listen, knowing you're an example, right? You're a role model, perhaps even a future, let's say, elite sports student's mentor. You saw about my non-for-profit. I really hope that you'll be able to join that someday. How can listeners connect with you personally and follow your journey in life?
Well, if you're Norwegian, you can follow my blog that I'm writing for family and friends, but that is probably not an option for too many people. Other than that, if people want to contact me, I'm more than willing to share my experiences and what I have to say. Like, I am on Instagram as well. That is MariHole90, I believe.
Okay. I'm going to link everything up in the show notes, so no worries about that.
Yeah, so if you want to, direct contact, it's easy just to write on my blog, even though it's in English. In Norwegian, you can write in English and I'll respond to you there as well.
So, wrapping up, Mari. Now, this show is all about teaching athletes, right, how to go beyond the norm, like I said, how to reach excellence, how to be successful, but not just in sports, but life, right? And here's why, before I ask you this last question, which is so important to me, and I hope to others. Most pro careers, they only last about 3 to 5 years. And within 2 to 5 years of retiring, if you're not forced due to injury, let's say, or getting a bad reputation for attitude or breaking the law, etc., there's a stat that says 60 to 78% of NFL, MLB, which is Major League Baseball, and NBA players will end up broke, divorced, or unemployed. And in 1995, it's even higher now, they estimate, by the way. While only 8.5% of the general population of the states, let's just say, were charged with assault, which is attacking another person, over 36% of all athletes were charged with assault. This is a crazy number. And a new incident of athlete crime happens every 2 days, and that doesn't even include crimes that are unreported by the media. And now all of this is happening, and 1 out of 5 kids that are 7 to 13 years old, they nominate athletes as their role models, you know? So we need true role models. So my goal is to help athletes become that by being three-dimensional people, like I mentioned, with goals of leaving a legacy. There's no better example than athletes like you. So what's your definition of being beyond athletic?
I think for me that is that you have to be aware that people look up to you, so you have to be aware of your actions as well as your behavior. Because people will copy it whether you notice it or not. So you have to kind of be bigger than yourself and your sport. Like, you have to see past just your sport. Because the bigger or the greater you are in your sport, the more people will look up to you. So you got to be aware that there is more to you than just the sport. And then people want to hopefully trying to copy you and be more like you. So be aware of your actions.
Fantastic. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate your time so much. I'm so grateful for the knowledge that you shared with us and the personal experiences. And I wish you the best this season. I'm definitely going to start tracking you now that I've got you a little more in my life and now we're Facebook friends. So I know that's going to be popping up. So good luck with everything and have a great day.
Thank you.
Did you like the show? Leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher.com so others will find us. And share the love. Think of one person that could benefit and send them the link for this episode. For more resources and tips, go to beyondathletic.com or tweet us at beyondathletic. I appreciate and thank you for listening.
What we doing live? Echoes in eternity.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
And this concludes our Chicago show. Please stay tuned.